There we go. Okay, so this is the afterburn. If you have a comment or question, you're welcome to go ahead and line up over here. If you're on live stream, we've got our Shamash team back there to take care of the questions. And so they'll make note of them with Shamash Rob. Go ahead and read them for us. This is really, you know, I love that we're going through whole letters almost completely through, and we're going to get the full context of things. I mean, I started off like anybody else started off in teaching, where you take one verse and another verse and you start pairing up all the verses. And for the most part, that can work okay, as long as the teacher has read the context without reading it to everybody but knows the context. But to have you hear it and see the flow. I know we took a little sidetrack last time to go to John 14, but it was part of the flow. And today we went to Ephesians, and it was part of the flow. So hopefully we're getting that as we go through this. All right, Chris.
So definitely with that, with the context, I've had enough already with going to chapel in college and them saying one verse of something and then going off on a tangent for the rest of it and quoting that verse multiple times as if it was always to back up their point. But what I was thinking through 1 John 3 was, like last time you were in John 14, I thought this had a lot of connections to John 15. So in 1 John 3:6, it says, everyone staying in him does not sin. So the idea, of course, of staying in him is like in John 15:4 with stay in me.
Yep.
And then in 1 John 3:13, it says, do not marvel if the world hates you. And that is like John 15:18, where it says, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. And in 1 John 3:22, it says, and whatever we ask, we receive from him because we guard his word, or guard his commands. And I thought that was like John 15:7.
Yep. You certainly could have gone through all of John 15 and had that match up beautifully with all of this.
Yeah, and I thought that was, it was insightful for me to think that, you know, asking him has to do with when we guard his commands. And then the two things that I thought were interesting that went with that were 1 John 3:3, you are already clean. I mean, no, this is the same verse. John 15:3, you are already clean because of the word. And then in 1 John 3:3, everyone having this expectation cleanses himself. And so I thought without that context of 1 John, you would think, okay, you're already clean, but really you cleanse yourself is the understanding in 1 John.
Correct.
Okay. And then the other one is in 1 John 3:11-12, it says, because of this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, which is the same beginning as John 15:12. As you can see, I was, when you were teaching, with my attention, I was just thinking, going through all this, but this is my command, that you love one another as I have loved you. Now in John 15, it goes to verse 13, which is, no one has greater love than this, one that one should lay down his life for his friend. So that's Yeshua. But then in 1 John 3:11-12, it goes, it starts the same way, that we should love one another, not as Cain. And so I thought it was a really interesting juxtaposition of Cain and Yeshua. Cain killed his brother, while Yeshua laid his life down for his brothers.
Right, then he goes into verse 16 and says the same thing as he said in John 15.
Yeah, yeah. So I almost think that 1 John is kind of a feature of John, like a little.
Yeah, this is what was important
in focus.
To John. Yeah, this is John. This is the heart, or his, you know, where his heart was. His heart was about he was very emotional, in not a bad way, where love was what it was all about. And this is what he focused on when Yeshua talked about things in a different way than, say, Matthew or John, you know, or Luke or Mark did. But he focused on the love aspect more than the others. And you see that coming through in his letters here. And, of course, now you guys are forcing this to go longer because I'm going to have to obviously go through John 15 next. So, you know. Not that we haven't already gone through John 15 multiple times in parts of other teachings, but certainly we could go through it again. And then we're also going to go through John 17, so we're going to get through both of those as part of this. So this may go a little bit longer than I had planned, but there's no doubt that all of that stuff is in there, okay? And what I did, and I misquoted when earlier when I said that with the staying in me, and I said John 17, that's really John 15, where he says that over and over again, so... That correction is there. All right, Steve?
All right, I'm going to just do a couple and I'll let others. You had in 1 John 3:1 where it says, what love the Father has given us. Maybe you could talk about how love from a father may be foreign for some of us, and how can they set aside the lack of love they know from an earthly father and accept the love from the heavenly Father?
All right, well, in this particular case, he's telling us, see what love the Father has, and so we're actually having things being pointed to that he did to express that love, okay? Now, in your life, you may not have had that experience with your physical father, and so that could be definitely a hard connection to make. That's why we have to be able to take that emotion, release that emotion, and be open to this new relationship, okay? It would be the same thing as if, let's say you had a marriage and your marriage was abusive in some way. You're going to have a lot of problems if you get married a second time if you haven't released all that, because you're going to bring that into the next relationship. So if you did not have a good father relationship and now you're dealing with the Heavenly Father, you have to come at it fresh with the realities that you're being told are here with him that were not in the case with your fleshly father. And so you have to separate those two. It's not easy because of the level of emotion connected, especially the negative emotions connected to some of those experiences. Okay, what else?
Okay. And then you talked about he was manifested for us, but can we look at it as he was manifested to give us a choice other than sin?
Well, again, the idea of manifested, again, had to be idea of being made known in a visible way, revealed or made clear, okay? And yes, that was done so that we would know the difference. We would know what sin is, and we'd know what righteousness is, and we'd be able to make the choice, which is the whole point Moshe's making in Deuteronomy 30, which says, I lay before you life and death, choose life, right? Okay?
All right, and then in verse 12, I just had a comment. Not accepting responsibilities for ourselves by finding what sounds like a world-accepted excuse, we stumble and don't know it. If we excuse our actions, this can become habitual in our detriment, and we don't even understand that we've enabled ourselves because we believe we don't have to take responsibility.
Okay, well said. All right, next. Okay, Shaquez?
3:17. Yes, 17. Can this apply? You said before about we need to be open vessels to give, or something to that effect, to give what he's given us. So can this apply to if we've been shown patience, give patience, or love, or laughter, or a listening ear, or something like that?
Well, okay, the idea, it says, whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need. In other words, whoever has and your brother doesn't, then you may want to figure out a way that we can provide for that person. Again, it's talking about physical things here. So if you have the world's goods. So you may have financial abundance, like you have more than you need financially, and maybe your brother doesn't. As opposed to back then, you know, you had more things like animals and crops and things that you could then provide somebody with. But here, generally, we provide people with the financial ability to buy those things. But again, it helps to go and get guidance so that we're not, you know, tripping over the idea of enabling or entitling, which can make things worse, not better. And that's the slippery slope here. So you don't want to do nothing because you don't want to entitle or enable, but you don't want to just do anything which might actually be entitling or enabling. So you go and you get counsel, all right? And then we will do the vetting of the situation to figure out how can we best fill that need and help the person so that it actually is helping them and not making it worse or enabling something, okay? All right, Deirdre?
As someone who, I understand what it's like to try to band-aid the problem, and now that I'm actually getting the help that I need, I feel so much better. But Yahweh also allowed me to go through this, and it's because I have been not kind to myself. I have a hard time receiving help from people. I have a hard time receiving help from people here at the congregation, and it is because of things that have happened in my past, being basically called a burden and selfish. I didn't really believe people here when they told me the opposite. And the people that did help me, a lot of the times, they ended up leaving the congregation. So I had that shield of pain up, and I didn't want to make the pain worse. But Yahweh allowed me to go through it. And I realized during the sermon that allowing the things in my past to control what I do now is holding me back, and it is also keeping me from forgiving them and loving them and moving on. I thought when I was going through this, is this just genetics? Is it time and chance? Am I being punished in some way? But it hit me upside the head one night when I was talking to Eric that he's teaching me through this because I got to the point where I begged for help. I got to the point where I was begging for help. I realized I could not go on anymore without asking for help, without receiving love. And he allowed me to stretch those wounds so that they can heal and that I can heal.
Amen.
So, regardless of all the discomfort and the annoyances that this has caused me, and I'm just very grateful that I'm healing now, but I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't not go through this again because it allowed me to learn. It allowed me to be awesome. Who he's coming to be. It's allowing me to become him. And this is hard to admit. It's hard to admit, but I want to admit it to you, and I want to admit it to everyone here and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for not allowing you all to love me. He also brought to mind that in my past, I've had a lot of other teachers who didn't know what they were talking about, and I've seen doctors that didn't know what to do with my situation. And then I submitted to you and went to someone that you trusted, and she is able to fix things almost instantaneously. And Yahweh allowed me to realize the other teachers are like those other doctors. The other teachers that I've had in the past, they're like those other doctors. And I'm under a new healthcare system now where Yahweh is the owner of the hospital and you are my primary care physician. Oh. And I am loving every second of it.
Oh, amen. I don't take Medicare or Medicaid, though, just so you know. Look, I want to just appreciate that Deirdre came up and said certain things. You know, a lot of you still have not allowed me and the leadership here a chance to love you by coming to get the help. And that's really, you know, you have reasons. I mean, you have fears and insecurities and all these other reasons why, or what people have told you that you bought into, whatever. But you won't come and get that. And you know, I think a large part of why you received what you did and got some of the healing is because you decided to submit and come and take that opportunity. And so Abba blessed that. Okay. Okay. And that's, you know, really the important thing that everyone, it's not necessarily just because I'm so brilliant or this particular doctor is so brilliant and, you know, nurse practitioner, et cetera, but because he wants to bless you for your taking that step of faith and trust to go forward. And so just, you know, appreciate that and I would say be proud of it because you should. I mean, you overcame some things that were blocking you from being able to do that in order to actually do it. So that's fantastic. So appreciate that very much. All right, Michael.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
So during the teaching today, it occurred to me that this is this chapter that we read today is probably one of the ones that could become a stumbling block if you're thinking about it in an incorrect light. So for the sake of context, when I'm reading this one, I keep in mind, I forgot where it was. Exactly what you said earlier, Deuteronomy 30:15. See, I have set before you today life and good and death and evil, and you know, make your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Yeshayahu 1:16. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean. He did some things for us, but he can't do that for us. Additionally, I did have a question, and it kind of. Basically, a Torah study, Ashley was asking about Yahweh's knowledge of what we do in the context of Avraham offering Yitzchak on the altar. But if the father calls someone, does it logically follow that he, having seen the end from the beginning, has seen that person succeed in the performance of his commands?
Yes.
Okay. So what then does that mean for those people who are called in, and then they leave, and they leave the walk altogether, and they do rebellion?
Again, he doesn't... as far as like, then we're getting tripped up into that predestination thing again. He has already seen what you've done because time and space doesn't work for him like it does for us in a linear sort of fashion. But he didn't call you because you would. He called you because you could. Okay? And he knows that some that he calls won't. But he called you because you could. And that's the difference, okay? Now, it's not just that he went through seeing everything and then said, okay, well, you're not going to make it, so I'm not going to call you, and you're not going to make it, so I'm not going to call you. Because part of the challenge is the wheat and tares growing up together. Okay? And the tares are not ones that can't. They're just the ones who choose not to. Okay? Because they're raised, they're growing up together. And so just keep that in mind, that he's not only talking to and calling and opening the eyes of those that will. It's those that could. And then the choices are ours. All right? All right. By the way, I wanted to say something after what Deirdre said, and I just want to throw this out there. You know, when it comes to taking care of people's needs and things like that, we talked about in the verse about having the world's goods and these kind of things. There will be times, and this is, I got to caution us so that we don't swing the pendulum too far either way. There'll be times when somebody will come up and mention something that sounds like a need, and your heart will be moved to want to help that need. But you may not know what it really is. You just heard what little you heard from the microphone or someone posted on Facebook or some other thing. And so you don't know, again, if you're helping or not helping by what you're trying to do. So what you should do is reach out and find out, hey, I was moved by what I heard. I would like to help. What can I do to help? Because otherwise, then we get a whole bunch of something that, you know, somebody may just, a whole bunch of people may send a bunch of funds in that maybe don't actually help the person and really wasn't what they needed. It just sounded like what they needed. And so I don't want to discourage you from doing these things, but see, if you send it and earmark it to a specific person, then that's who gets it for sure. If you contact us and say, look, if that's not what they need, use this for someone who does, then it gives us the freedom to then use it in other ways. But you can contact us at least to find out if what you wanted to do was actually going to help. Did that hopefully make sense to everyone? I don't want you to not be moved, okay? I want you to still be moved. But you need to know that what you want to do may not actually be helpful, okay? In other words, you're moved to help, which is good, but how to help may be something you just don't know because you don't know the situation in the detail you would need. You only heard what little bit you heard. Okay? So my encouragement would be contact us first. And if it's financial, we would say, absolutely, that's fantastic. Go ahead and send that. We'll make sure it gets to the person or whatever it is. If it's financial is not what they need, then we can give you an encouragement on how else you might be able to meet that need. Because bear in mind that sometimes when people put out what sounds like a financial need, it may not actually be. I'm not saying that of anybody in particular lately or anything like that. This is from 20 years plus experience, okay? But what you don't know is that person is going to Starbucks twice a week and doing all these other things, and meanwhile they're whining about not having any money. I'm not saying that's happened recently, okay? These are the kinds of things that happen, all right? We've had people go online and complain that we've not helped them at all. Meanwhile, we've helped them a ton, financially and otherwise, and yet they're still out there, you know, giving all kinds of grief. We've had people, this is many years ago, go on Facebook and talk about all their financial needs after we've told them to stop and to call us directly. And we would help them if that would actually help them. But see, after calling us and finding out that we weren't going to help them unless they did certain things themselves to help themselves, they decided to go the other route. And they got very offended when I told them to knock it off and deleted them out of the group. Because they just want what they want. They don't actually want help. They want what they think is what they need. So you got to be very careful with this. I'm not saying there aren't any genuine needs out there. There are. And a lot of them are financial. What I'm saying is allow us to help you make better decisions on how to help them. Does that make any sense? Okay. And we still may help them immediately with a financial need, but only enough to fix the immediate problem without enabling it to continue while insisting that they do certain things to start to fix the problem and offering the guidance to do that. All right. I just want to throw that out there because I know that so many of you have such really big hearts and don't stop having that. Okay. And if you've got extra finances to help with this kind of thing, then you can always trust that we are helping people and send it in as third tithe or as benevolence, and it will go into that account and be used only for that. But then it will be used as we see fit to help the person in the right way, as opposed to just throwing a bunch of money. And by the way, when a lot of you send, somebody may have a $300 problem and then 10 of you send in over that, and next thing you know, they've got $3,000. Now you got a whole new problem with them. Okay, because now they've got more than they needed and it could create a different problem. It also may encourage them to keep doing whatever it is that caused that money to come in the first place. This everything has a trap to it. Does that make any sense? Okay, and I don't want you to cause a stumbling for your brother trying to help your brother either. This is also why so many of the people that have come to us have been so successful, and others refuse to come to us because they don't want to get that kind of counsel. They don't want to own their problem and actually fix it. They want us just to throw money at it and fix their immediate problem. But that doesn't fix it. It just puts a big Band-Aid on it. And so let's understand that there are people here that have had tremendous success because they were willing to come and expose their failure financially. It's not a failure as in like I am a failure. They had failed up to that point in handling their finances. And now they're being successful because of the guidance that I was able to give and Elder Billy was able to give, etc., in helping them to change their financial behavior and habits, okay, to change those things, okay? But trust me when I tell you that anybody in the congregation, and that means also internationally, that has an immediate or urgent financial need and contacts us, and it's a legitimate thing, and they establish that with us and are willing to work with us, we help them. Don't think for a second that we don't, okay? And so be encouraged with that. And if you want to help that as well, certainly do that. And like I said, the easiest thing to do to be able to do that is to just send the funds in general to the benevolence and let that, and then encourage the people then to ask. Because again, you don't know, you know. It's like ministries. I used to be frustrated with ministries out there saying, well, we need money to buy some new computers. I said, okay, well, you didn't tell us how much they were, and you also didn't say when you got enough. And so the computer may have cost $500, and they got 20 people to send in enough money, and now they got $4,000 for the computers, and so you're not being honest about it. Okay? And so Which is why we never, by the way, do that. We never put out, hey, we need money for this or we need money for that or whatever, because then all kinds of funds would come in that don't need to come in that way. You shouldn't need the motivation of a specified item to put your money towards. If you have abundance and you want to bless the ministry or whatever it needs, just send it. And then let us use it as it's needed. It's just funny how if you give them a specific thing, then they get excited about it. And then they want to throw something at it. Well, that's fine if you need that. And then what I would do is I almost wanted to set this up once upon a time. I had an idea. You know how they have like wedding registries? I was almost going to set up like a ministry registry where someone can actually pick the item and pay for it, and then it's off the list. Then you know that that's what you purchased. Instead of abundant people sending in more than you need for the one item. Ministry needs a new whatever, fine. Then we put that item there, and if people want to contribute to it, once it's there, the item comes off the thing. Does that make more sense? I mean, because then you know that that's what you're actually giving towards, and you're not, you know, because a 30 of you give towards it, then we have enough money to get 30 of them instead of one. We don't need 30 of them. Much easier, though, just to send it in general, right? And then allow us to use it as needed. Because there's plenty of need. I mean, after all, we're about to build, you know, a brand new sanctuary building on the property. That's going to be plenty of need. And we have people all the time needing help financially, food, shelter, whatever they need, cars breaking and whatever else goes wrong. Just wanted to throw that out there. And again, I love that your heart's that way. Don't diminish that. I'm just giving you a maybe more appropriate way to express it. All right? Just keep that in mind. All right. But for all of you that do send in and earmark it towards somebody, I can promise you those people got whatever you sent. Okay? We are diligent to make sure that if you send something for somebody, they get it. All right? Sometimes we wonder why people are sending to the person. It's because they said something on a mic and then they go on Facebook and they didn't intend that, by the way, necessarily. They just happened to be dealing with something at that moment and the way it came across, you know, pulled at somebody's heartstrings, and I get that. All right. Enough of all that. I just wanted to encourage all of you. And by the way, I want to thank all of you for the participation that you do in those things, because you are a blessing and you help the ability to help these people, you know, when finances are what they need, when they need some money to do something or to fix something or replace something or whatever. Anyway, Janet.
Rabbi, can I ask a follow-up question about what you were just saying? Because I was listening to you and I remember... You probably know it better than me, for sure. You know it better than me. When Yeshua was asked by a woman who wasn't, I think she wasn't an Israelite, and she was asking for healing, and at some point she says something like, but Master, even the dogs get the food mm-hmm. left or whatever on the floor. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, so when we are helping people, this should be our first place that we should help, and then everybody else outside of the camp will be next?
That's correct.
Okay. I have a question about, I think it was 3:15, when it says that, you know, anyone hating his brother is a murderer. So hating, I know it's 55 parts, but hating in like a small summary would be not forgiving, not being kind, not being compassionate, maybe using different measures, adultery, all that, all whatever is against Torah is what hating means.
Well, look, hating would be doing anything that is the opposite of expressing love. So they need something that would be loving to do, and because you hate them, you won't do it. So hating isn't necessarily only doing something to them actively, but it may be because you don't have that love, but you hate them, you don't do something that you could do, okay? You're stopping yourself from doing something that you could do for them. The compassion's not there, the caring's not there, the love's not there. And so he's trying to give us this extreme way of looking at it as love and hate, but if love would require a certain behavior and you don't do it because of how you feel about that person, that's what he's saying is hating them.
Okay, great. I have two questions. Mm-hmm. 3:16, what exactly does it mean to lay down your lives for your brothers?
Well, look, it's when you're willing to lay down your preferences, your things of you for somebody else, and you're going to put them first. And this is where we're told to esteem others above ourselves, okay? So it's putting them ahead of you.
The last one. Love is the theme, right? You were saying that John is all about love. Okay, so for somebody who's married, right, what is the actual, the love of a person from that is not your spouse, you know, different gender. I mean, let's say a male, or for me, in my case, or a husband for towards a woman. There's supposedly some, I guess, boundaries in that, the way you love people, other people, or.
Well, look, you've got multiple concepts when it comes to love, right? You have friendship love. You've got agape or Elohim level unconditional love. You've got eros, which would be more sexual or physical love that way. And so there's appropriate expressions of love based on relationship. Okay, based on relationship. Now he's mostly talking here the kind of love you can have for everybody, which is the Elohim level or the agape love. Okay, that's where you can esteem someone above yourself. That's where you can make sure you're showing compassion and mercy and kindness, etc., which you can do to all people. All right? Whereas friendship, you're going to have a certain level of relationship with someone to really be that close and be friends. I don't mean like casual, like we call people friends that are really not even that close to us. And, you know, after all, Facebook invented the idea that anybody that you just know, you can say that you're friends with, but they're not really friends necessarily, so many of them. All of us only have so many, you know, just a few that are actually our friends, right? People that we are open to and they're open to us and we share in each other's burdens. That's the level of friends. And that would be the filio or the Philadelphia, that friend love, that brotherly love, right? And then, of course, the eros, that's love that's just between the spouse. Okay, that's a love that's only between husband and wife. And so, really, the relationship dictates the different levels of love. Now, of course, if you're married, you have all three, hopefully. You have all three of those active. All right. With other people, you would maybe only have one or two of them active. Okay. The third one only being for the husband and the wife. Okay. Rob, live stream.
Okay. Sandy Davis has kind of the same question. She went in 3:14-17. When he speaks of laying down our lives and taking care of our brother's needs, is it referring to those in the world or just those inside the camp?
I think Janet had brought that up, but it was hard to hear. We'd start with the inside the camp. Not to be as a ending point, but we put the oxygen mask on first so that we can then be able to bless others after that. So we take care of inside the camp first, okay? But we're not, judging or cultishly not caring about those outside the camp. But we need to take care of inside first so that there's more people healthy and able to then help others outside, okay? So for all of you that have all this funding you send to all of these different wonderful little organizations around the world, but you're not sending it to take care of the body first, I think you're making a mistake, okay? Now, I'd like to see at some point MTOI have mission work and outside work that we do, that the funding then can afford to go and do that to help those outside the camp. And that people then would ask questions like, well, why are you helping us out here? It says, because of our obedience to our Father, that we should care for one another and that we should be a light. And, not where we would force you to listen to a sermon in order to get fed, like a lot of the Christian missionaries do, okay? But that we would just go and help people and let them ask the question if they want to. By the way, why do you do this? Because we think this is an expression of who we are in the context of Messiah and the Creator. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, though they don't ask another question, I'm not going to push anymore, right? But if they want to know more about it, then we say, sure, I'd love to tell you about it if you want. But that's not why I'm here. I'm here because you're starving to death. Okay? And we want to feed you. We want to build some shelters for you and help you with some medical things and whatever. All right, Rob?
I guess I'll skip down. Daphne Neighbors asked kind of a follow-up about people panhandling. What's the best way to handle that? If people, would you give to those or not?
I generally don't. If I have the time and the ability to stop and find out what the situation is, that may be different. Of course, it might not be safe to do that. Okay, so you don't know what you're dealing with there. We still live in a world and in most countries where if those people wanted, there is stuff for them. Okay, other than just standing on the corner of a street looking for those things. And so I don't generally, I know a lot of people do, just go and give. And so, and that's not because I'm cold-hearted or anything. I mean, if you ask people in our ministry, I'm very generous, but I'm very generous with people that I know what their situation is and I know that I'm actually helping them. Okay? And I'm not just talking about with the ministry's money. I'm talking with my own funding. That's not to brag or anything. I'm just saying is that I don't mind being generous at all. But it's in situations where I actually know what's happening and I know that I'm actually helping and not just throwing a little short-term Band-Aid on it, which may eventually go into drugs or alcohol anyway. But I'm actually helping them. If you want to see how serious they are about being hungry, see if you can just get them some food. And if they don't want food, they want money, then you get your answer right there. Okay? Because they're just trying to get money. All right? Or if they say that they need work, well then, ask them where they've looked and what kind of work. Because right now, nobody should be out on the street that can't work. There's work everywhere. Everywhere. At any possible thing you might, if they think they're not qualified, if they can hit, the thing that looks like a Coke or a French fry or a hamburger, they can get a job. And they're all hiring. And they're going to make more doing that and build up their self-esteem and worth, et cetera, than standing on a corner asking for handouts. Okay, Rob?
Okay, Stephen Wood, 1 John 3, verse 9. Can you elaborate on keeping his seed within him, please? Is it referring to a holy mindset, or does it also have a physical meaning, like in Genesis, when creation bears seed after its own kind?
Okay, now, again, his seed. Okay, so what's a seed? It's something that is planted and grows. And so his seed, we're talking about here, the Torah, the truth, the light, the life, etc. So his seed, that which is him that was birthed in you, then flourishes and grows into what it, ultimately the plant or the tree or whatever that it would grow into. So it's a metaphor for that. Okay, Rob?
From Yanni, is it okay to say this teaching is about our heart, pride, rebellious problem? We don't know, quote unquote, her equals a tree of life from Proverbs 4:5-7. Wisdom, understanding, knowledge. That we need to know Yah and who the her is.
Okay, I think I understood what she was saying and I would agree. Look, I didn't hit this very hard. I know that I do in most teachings I do. But this whole idea of authority, I mean, there's a reason we ended up back in Ephesians chapter 4, because Ephesians 4 tells you need this structure to get where you're supposed to get, to help us come into that completeness and fullness of the stature of the measure of Messiah. And we don't do the things that Paul's telling the Ephesians to do when we have the rebellious, self-sovereign challenges that cause us to not want to come under authority. Because then we're not looking for the fivefold guys. And then if we find them, we're not submitting to them. And it's funny, because I know there's a lot of you out there that believe that I may be one of these guys, but then you still don't come and submit. There's still that challenge there. It's all well and good for you to think I'm a good teacher, but what about coming under authority? That's a whole nother level. That's a whole different problem. And it doesn't matter how many testimonies you hear of people that have come under authority and have been blessed by it, because somehow you figure that that's just not going to work for you, or I'm just not going to do it. But yet, this is the structure that the scripture gives us over and over and over again. And yet we don't want to embrace that. Okay, Rob?
From Brandon B., 1 John 3, verse 9, whosoever is born of Elohim does not commit sin. Is this referring primarily to ongoing, habitual, unrepentant sin, or does it also include sinning just one time?
No, I think I explained that in the teaching. You may have to go back and listen to it again, but I'll try again. Look, it says that when you're birthed of Elohim, when you're staying in that place, then you're not going to sin. And you're not going to sin as long as the seed stays in you. And I think I explained this. But if you don't stay in him and he doesn't stay in you, you're going to sin. And so the staying is the key piece of this. All right? So he says, if you've been born of Elohim, you're not going to sin. Unless, of course, you don't stay in that state and he doesn't stay in you. You have to step off in order to sin. Which is not hard to do. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, huge concrete barriers keeping you from stepping off. There's no barriers whatsoever. You can just move left and move right, and you're right off the path. The only thing stopping you would be your submission to that seed, so to speak. Your submission to him in that structure. That's the thing that would stop you. Okay? Now, when he's talking about being born, he's also talking about the idea that when you behave a certain way, you're showing that you're born of either Elohim or of the devil. And your choices are going to show that moment. Now, it's not like, again, if my, you know, when my wife gave birth to my child, that child will always be her child. That's the physical way of doing it. But in the spirit, our choices are showing at that moment who we're being born of at that moment. Because the thought process and behavior was birthed out of either the devil's mindset or the Elohim, or out of Elohim's mindset. The choice to do righteousness is an Elohim thought. The thought to do what I want to do, which is sin, that's a devil thought. If I want to do something that's not in line with the creator or Elohim. Okay? Rob?
Pete and Brenda Lamb, is John also saying that when we treat others as if they're unworthy of love and forgiveness, we make ourselves unworthy of his love and forgiveness?
Yes, that would be consistent also with the model prayer that says, if you don't forgive others their trespasses, your Heavenly Father won't forgive you. Okay, Matthew 6. All right, next.
Stephen Wood, would it be correct to glean from John that if we put others before us in everything without considering ourselves, that the Father will take care of us completely? Is this the right mindset?
I'm pretty sure that the answer would be yes. Say it one more time, because I thought it was missing maybe one little element, but go ahead, say it one
more
time.
Would it be correct to glean from John that if we put others before ourselves in everything without considering ourselves, that the Father will take care of us completely? Would this be the right mindset?
Okay, so I thought there was a missing piece to that. The answer is yes and no. The reason I say that is because if you're putting others before yourself, and the others are, because you're putting them before you, are going to go in a wrong direction. Like your family that wants you to come to a wedding on Saturday, well, you could put them before yourself, and then you go and do, you know, break the Sabbath and go do the things that they want to do. So that would not be where then Elohim would just take care of everything else. It's when you're in line with him and you're putting others above you that would hold true. So that's why I said yes and no. Thank you for reading it again, because I knew there was one little piece that was missing in there. And the piece missing was, it's not just esteeming others above yourselves in general. Because I could put somebody, if let's say I'm unequally yoked. I could put my wife above me, and that's all well and good, unless putting her above me puts me out of line with him, right? So we have to be careful that what we do doesn't misalign us with him, puts us out of alignment with him. All right, next, one more.
Pete and Brenda Lamb, 2 Corinthians 5:21, inconsistent with 1 John 3:5. I've heard that the verse in 2 Corinthians means that Yeshua became sin, but isn't that contrary to what John is saying?
Okay, so 5:21 says, for he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of Elohim. Okay, so again, the way that this gets translated and all the nuances you lose in language and everything else is losing the idea that it's not that he became sin. He took upon himself the penalty of sin so that we could be looked at as righteous. Because if you remember, Ezekiel 18 said that all your righteousness is nothing once you sin. And of course, then if you repent and you get back on the righteousness path, then even the sin gets forgotten. But the past doesn't avail anything. But he's saying here, look, he was made to take that space so that we could be looked at and become the righteousness of Elohim. Not because we decide what's right, and not because he became sin. Sin would mean that he did something or took on something that was against Elohim. Everything he did is what the Father told him to do. He fulfilled everything. That's why he said to, you know, his last words was, I finished what you gave me to do. He said, it is finished. What's finished? What you sent me down here to do. Okay? Not everything was finished. Just you sent me here to do something and I did it. And that task is finished. And part of it was that in doing that, we now have the possibility of eternal life that we wouldn't have had otherwise, because our sin would have required the death. And so again, it's a poor wording coming into the English. I have no idea if the Greek helps that much, or how that may have been written even in Hebrew first or whatever was written, you know, because after all, it is something that Paul wrote, and who he was writing to might have been written in Greek. But we lose some of those nuances. Okay? All right. Over here.
On John, 1 John 3:14, you talked about forgiving, but also that we should remember as to not to allow the same thing happen again. So how does that tie in with forgive 70 times 7? And how many times is the remember but stay clear? 1, 2, 5? And can staying clear feed the emotion that caused the harm in the beginning?
All right, I'm going to recommend counseling for you. No, I'm kidding. look, I think I like the point you made. First of all, the forgiving 70 times 7 is because no matter how many times it happens, you have to release the negative emotional stuff. Okay, so now that you understand that part of it, you can understand why the forgiving 70 times 7 makes sense. In other words, no matter how many times it happens, you have to let go of the negative emotion. Now, as far as you keep putting yourself back in the same place, well, then you're not learning any lessons either. Okay, at some point you need to just stay clear and recognize I'm not going to keep putting myself back in the same position and let that happen over and over again. If your brother's going to do that same thing to you over and over and over again, at some point you may just need to say to your brother, I'm not angry, I'm not mad, I'm not holding anything against you, but I think I would rather move on and not keep putting myself back in that position. And that becomes then a reasonable and logical consequence of their actions. As opposed to you getting bitter and getting in their face and calling them names, you don't need to do all of that. You just simply say, look, I don't think I want to do this anymore. So I'm going to get off this roller coaster and where we keep going around. Because what's a roller coaster do? It not only goes up and down and everything else, but it goes right back to where it started and it goes again. And it goes right back to where it started and it goes again. At some point, you want to get off the loop. Okay? And so that's... So if you're going to get to 70 times 7, then somewhere along the line, you missed it. You could have got off that loop. Okay? And then you don't need to sit there and have the same thing happen over and over and over again. Or you haven't gotten the counsel with the two of you where you could have gotten some of those things fixed. There's lots of things that could have gone on. The thing is, you still have to forgive, which means to release all that negative stuff. Okay, what else?
All right, and then finally, in 16, you talked about whether we're willing to lay ourselves down for one another. And I just want to ask, when somebody needs help, do you do the minimum to satisfy the need, or do you exceed the expectations? An example, like when we're often asked to help clean the building here, are you in such a hurry to get done you don't care that it got done correctly? You're just only hoping that somebody saw you were cleaning? So that's a point I want to make.
Now, Steve, wait, hold on. I know nobody does that. Hey, did you see over here? Look, see, I'm cleaning, okay? No. Look, you shouldn't be doing things to be seen. You should be doing them because it's the right thing to do. You should do it with, you know, put your focus and your full strength behind what you're doing and do it the best you can, especially when it's in service to the rest of the body, okay? Because your Father's watching your attitude and your approach. And, you know, he uses words like utmost. And you're exemplifying definitely anything but utmost when you behave that way, okay? But you should be doing it with strength and with the right attitude, etc., instead of sitting there looking like you're sucking on a pickle and you're all miserable, okay? All right. They want me to clean. I'm cleaning. That's just not the right approach. All right. Who is next? Taylor?
I had a question for 13. To not marvel, my brothers, if the world hates you. Is that like a... If that doesn't happen, is that like a sign that you're doing something wrong?
Well, no, again, it's not, let's take the word hate out of there and change it to if they're not loving you, if they're not treating you in a loving way. He's using the two extremes, love and hate, okay? So he says, don't marvel, my brothers, if the world doesn't love you, okay? So some of you are really, I don't know if the right way to say this. I mean, you're the type of people that people generally wouldn't hate. You're just nice people. You're kind. You don't cause much problem for people. So it's not that you would feel people hating you, but they may not be treating you with the love that we're talking about that would be expressed. They don't like what you're doing. They don't think you're right. They may be a little bit more cold towards you as opposed to, we think of hate as being a much more angry and bitter and aggressive thing. But he's comparing two things here. And so whatever is not of love, he's calling it hate. So he's only giving you two choices here. Lots of shades of gray in between, but he's giving you the two choices. If you're not being treated lovingly the way he's describing love, the way he describes love here, then he's calling that hate. Okay? And so that's more probably what you experience. And that's why you may be thinking, I don't know, maybe I'm doing something wrong because the world doesn't hate me. Well, because you're not the type of person generally that people would hate, which is good, okay? All right? But if the world feels really comfortable with you and you start to feel really comfortable with the world, then there may be a different problem, okay? All right, Stephanie?
Okay, so as we got to in chapter 3, verse 11, it says, because this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. It caused me to want to go back and say what was said in the beginning and what would be his definition of love, because as you were kind of pointing out just a moment ago, love and hate generally in our society can be emotion versus action, and we come from that place. Or we also have the whole thing of, I may receive love personally in a different way than somebody else might receive love. And so understanding what the Father identified from his perspective as being the way we love each other. So I went back to Leviticus 19, and I won't read the whole thing because you can read all that for yourself, but it's just interesting if you peruse through some of it where it talks about, because it starts out where he kind of reiterates the Ten Commandments in there, and he talks about reaping harvest and leaving food at the corners for those in need. He talks about not stealing, lying, or deceiving one another. He talks about not swearing falsely. He talks about not oppressing your neighbor or robbing him of wages that they've earned, not cursing the deaf or stumbling, being a stumbling block for the blind, not doing unrighteousness in right ruling. Don't go slandering among the people. Don't stand against the blood of your neighbor. Don't hate your brother in your heart. Reprove your neighbor for certain and bear no sin against him. Don't take vengeance or bear a grudge. And all shall love your neighbor as yourself, which is kind of the culmination verse, obviously, right, that encompasses all of it. But I had to go back earlier because, of course, that's what you teach us to do, is don't look at the one verse, look at the context. But it's interesting to go back and look at all the things that the Father identifies to say, this is what, so if what you've learned from the beginning is, this is how you treat each other, which also kind of makes me go back to earlier in chapter 3, when they're talking about the sin, it makes me wonder, because to your point in the very beginning, we can't know exactly what the letter was being written to. They may have understood what circumstances were going on, but we don't. But if he's referring to this Torah, it makes you wonder whether some of them were, you know, not leaving their fields that way, not treating their people that way. And certainly we know from Yeshua's ministry that he was certainly taking the leadership to task for not teaching the Torah properly, or adding to it, giving things that weren't part of Torah and making that a burden on them. So I just, once again, I appreciate all that you do to teach us how to really dive in and ask the right questions so that you can really understand what it is that he's trying to communicate to us through this.
Amen. Look, the key here in John, okay, in 1 John anyway, is that he wants, I think what he's addressing is that people were saying that they had a love for Elohim, but didn't understand that if it wasn't manifesting in their love for each other, that they were missing the point. Okay, I mean, I think that's sort of the main thing. And he's connecting it to commandment keeping. And it says, if you know, those who say they love him and don't guard the commands are liars. And the commands, you know, a lot of it has to do with how we treat each other. And I think that was a huge part of this. And trying to help us understand. And then he brings in a few different places the idea of anti-messiahs and false teachers and falsehoods that are there. And that's where people are being lied to, where they're only getting shown a very small piece of the puzzle. In other words, he's saying, look, no, you have to have all of this. You're focusing on only one little piece, and then you're not realizing that it's because you're buying into some false teaching there that have not given you the fullness of the counsel, so to speak. All right, good. Okay, who is next? Brianna? Nice jacket.
Thank you.
It's mine. Okay.
First John 3:20. That if our heart condemns us, Elohim is greater than our heart and knows all. It reminded me of a verse in Numbers 14:14. Mm-hmm. That's one specific verse, but the whole story of the spies going out, mm-hmm. and they had fear, which is in the emotion in this case. But Moshe said, Yahweh, you Yahweh are seen eye to eye, and that your cloud stands above them, and them being the Nephilim or the thing that they feared. And so what I took that out of that is his cloud stands above fear or doubt in that case, or he is seen eye to eye with any and all overwhelming negative emotions in me. So that's what I took out of that.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, Chris.
I had a question about putting people before ourselves and letting down our life for other people. So what happens when you want to do that for someone, but then the other person says, no, let me do that for you? And then it becomes like an argument over who's going to be the better life giver over...
My prayer is that that's your biggest problem. Look, you know, clearly neither one of you actually understands the concept if you're fighting over that, because you're not willing to lay down your life for your brother. Okay? Look, I'll give you an example of how I do this. If I'm out eating with somebody and they go to offer to pay for the meal, And I may say, no, that's okay. I was going to take care of it for you, whatever. And if they insist, then I say, absolutely, I appreciate that. That's where I'm not going to fight with my brother over each one of us trying to take care of the other one. Okay? I did want to make sure that it was clear that I had wanted to either take care of myself or the other. But if they were the ones who said it first, and I said, then fine, then you're welcome to do that. Okay? And so don't fight over, you know, which one is going to be the one being more generous or being more this or that. Allow your brother to do that if he wants to, okay? And so, you know, I know some of us have some pride and ego issues where we're like, well, I can take care of myself. I don't want them to think, no, maybe they just want to bless you, okay? But I don't need it. But that doesn't matter. They want to do it, so it's a blessing whether you need it or not. They want to just do something for you. And if you're going to argue about it, then you're missing the whole point. I've watched people argue over paying the check because everybody's fighting to want to pay it, which is weird, but you know. But why would you argue? Okay? And so this is, you know, and if you really wanted to do it, the next time get out faster. Be the one to do it quicker. That's all. All right? And so just do it that way. But just, you know, if you are at a point where you wanted to do something for your brother and your brother wanted to do it for you, don't argue about it. Whoever got out there first, let them be the one, and you just find another way to do it next time. Okay? Otherwise, you missed the whole point and ruined the whole thing trying to fight about it. It just doesn't make any sense. All right, who's next? Isaiah?
So many thoughts jumbling around in my head. You're talking about those of us who have, I guess, I don't know. Okay, so I'm reading, you know, one of the common threads in here is the fellowship, the koinonia that happens in the body. You know, and John really started out in 1 John to tell us that, you know, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, then we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Yeshua HaMashiach, his son, cleanses us from all sin. And then you were talking about how that there's a lot of people who haven't tested and tried and seen that, you know, the leadership here can give the love and the support and that we need, that I need. And for me, I mean, it's been a path of a lot of bad choices and things, but I've also been used to figure it out on your own and be independent. Like, I've just been really, as an adult, independent. And I know it's a fault. I know it's an error. Because I don't have the right answers. Like, I know that I can make a wrong turn. There's like this thing in me that's, and I don't know that it's ego, because I'm hugely social, and I want the fellowship. I want all the different things that, you know, the iron sharpening iron and that. There's this like antisocial thing about me that arises too, that, you know, I want to be close and have the kind of fellowship that cleanses me from all sin. Because the more I get to know you and Messiah working in you and vice versa, I understand enough to know that it's really going to bring a lot of conviction to me. Oh, and that verse, by the way, I've always heard that verse used to try to excuse sin. The one to say, if your heart condemns us, then Elohim is bigger than your heart. And I kind of look at it from the flip side of it, that if your heart is condemning you, it could be Elohim condemning your heart, because you got all this self-talk that is out of touch with reality and making sin okay. So I kind of come from this background, though, of like kind of do-it-yourself or kind of pull it together and get the answer and show no weakness. And honestly, I don't know. My wife and I have kind of just been, she's got her own independence and so do I. For me, it's been like this weird, like, contradiction of self, because it's things that are working in me, like Shaul, that he said, I find within myself another nature that I hate. I don't like this nature. And like, I mean, I took those personality tests. My wife took the personality test for me also and found that I'm heavily yellow. And so, I mean, I know that I need social stimulation. I'm at this place where I've been woken up with the truth, and that any kind of social stimulation is not okay with me. There's a nature within me that's contradiction to myself that I guess to try to wrap this up. Because I think that what I'm doing is, I think that I'm antisocial on one hand, is because I don't want people to get close enough to see the error in me. And I think that I try to decorate it. I do, like in Proverbs, he talks about, you know, those who decorate their sin will not find mercy. They'll be destroyed suddenly. But those who cast it behind them and abandon it, they make teshuvah, they find mercy.
Right.
It's like putting a bow on it. I looked at the word study. It's like taking a package of garbage and then packing it up like a present, putting a bow on it and wrapping it up and making it a gift when it's foul, actually.
Right.
And so here I am, and Deirdre actually kind of opened the door. I'm like, you know what? Because I don't know how to not be vulnerable. I don't like picking up the microphone because I don't know how. I'm pretty vulnerable. I wear my emotions on my sleeve most often, but I don't know how to. Okay, I want leadership, and I want to reach out, and I want to be like, hey, I need help. Here's the thing. But at the same time, I try to like decorate and cover it so that I don't look so vulnerable. And then I just take what could be beautiful friendship and fellowship and keep it at arm's length so as to not let someone close enough to feel that raw vulnerability. But I'm here, and I mean, I feel raw and vulnerable, and I know this is exactly what my flesh needs. And so I'm like, no, stay yourself, stay, be quiet and sit still. So I guess there's a question in there. Did you hear it?
I was about to ask the question if there was a question in there. I was just going to thank you for sharing that.
Really, the part about he said that, you know, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, and we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Yeshua HaMashiach, his son, cleanses us from all sin. And then getting the Ephesians 4 ministry, is it really like, because I heard you say something like it's rebellion really to not walk as he is in the light. And if we are, then we'll have the fellowship and we'll be cleansed. So is it rebellion working in me? I mean, I feel like I know part of the answer. That part of this, yeah, it's rebellion working in me. The other part is like...
Well, look, okay. I kind of know what you're trying to get at. Even though there wasn't a specific question there at the beginning. But look, it's not just that there's rebellion. There's a reason behind when people rebel, okay? And in your case, what you're struggling with is, because of that vulnerability, is to be exposed to that level of recognition that someone else knows that you're struggling with something. And so when we have the fivefold and we talk about, you know, and it goes to Deuteronomy 17 where there's authority, and you go to that authority, then you have to submit to that authority. And that authority is there, though, as Paul teaches us in Ephesians, to bring us to that place of being into the fullness of the measure of the stature of Yeshua. And, you know, as far as walking in that light and having fellowship, well, that light is Torah. And Torah does tell us in Deuteronomy that we should be going to get the guidance, and that if we go to get guidance, it's arrogance not to listen to the guidance. And so the rebellion is not so much like you got guidance and you said, well, I'm not doing it. You know, and just saying, forget it. The rebellion is, I don't want to put myself in a place where I have to do it. So I'm not going to go and put myself in a place knowing that if I go, I have to do it. And that's an insecurity issue more than it's just an outright arrogant rebellion issue. Okay? To be vulnerable really, really is very challenging, especially for the men. You know, and to be able to be open and admit that we're needing help and that we're not perfect and that we could use guidance and that we don't know what we're doing. And there is that other thing that wars in our members. And we talked about this a lot in the law of sin and death, which is what I think is the right way to go as opposed to what he thinks is the right way to go, right? So there is that other thing that's in us there, okay? And so... You know, on the one hand, the yellow, by the way, with the colors, though, on the one side, the yellow side is very social, but social from the, there's not any intimacy there, and there's not any relationship there. It's just the entertainer, the being out there and having that kind of fun. The blue intimacy, the blue social need is a completely different one. It requires a level of vulnerability in both sides and intimacy that you get to know each other. Intimacy, I don't mean like necessarily, you know, like a husband-wife intimacy, but the idea that I can really get to know you and you can really get to know me not just on the surface, but that we really can get to know each other and be vulnerable. Okay, so that vulnerability is something that the blue side, you know, really desires, but also has a lot of caution that, you know, you could step on that real easily. Okay, and so it's very hard for the blue side because they want it, but they're also afraid to get stepped on, and so it's kind of an internal struggle there. Okay, but the yellow social versus the blue social are very different. All right, they both want social interaction, but there's a different motivator there. And so it's the blue side that you're having that wants that more intimacy, but is afraid of it. Okay, and so wants to hold people at a little bit of a distance because, after all, if I let you in, you might hurt me. Okay, and I don't want to be hurt. Okay, because remember, the blue side has anything that is preventable should be prevented. Okay, nothing negative should ever happen if it's preventable. So that's when you want to keep people, you know, at a distance, which is hard because you also want to be close. So you have this kind of, you know, conundrum going on where you can't have your cake and eat it there. You want to be close, but then that puts you in a vulnerability position. It's tough. Okay? And same thing with people not wanting to counsel. They want the counsel, but they don't want to counsel. Okay? They want to get counsel, but in order to get it, they have to actually come and get counsel, which puts them in that vulnerable place where somebody might say, by the way, you need to stop doing this, or you need to change that, or do this other thing, and you may not want to hear that, even though you know you need to, but then now you're accountable to what you heard, and that kind of forces the issue. And that's what, you know, I appreciate that you said you realize you need this, even though it may not be something you're comfortable doing, but you recognize it's something that you need to do. Now that's a good start right there. Okay, so good job. All right, Justin.
So that kind of brings me also to the question of what we were learning here with love and Torah and learning to love Yahweh and learning to love one another. You know, sometimes, yeah, it's difficult to love a brother, but for the most part, I love pretty much everybody. I try to get along with them. You know, and I'm trying to learn how to love him. I guess what this comes about, hating your brother is murder. And obviously hate, I just take out brother and just read hating is murder. So how does that play in when we can get along with others and we're trying to build that relationship with him, but we still don't quite love ourselves? How does that play into this? Does that keep us from him?
Well, look, I mean, it always comes down to the process of, like I said, put the oxygen mask on first, like on the airplanes. You can't do for others what you can't even do for yourself. It's very hard to genuinely love someone when you don't love yourself, okay? And it's very hard to release negative emotions when you're still holding them on to yourself. And so you have to start with you. That's why when I tell everybody the forgiveness teaching, and I talk about how in Matthew, you know, in the model prayer, he says, if you do not forgive others, he will not forgive you. That's got to start with you forgiving you. And I know there's a lot of you out there that really struggle with certain things you did in your life that you do not forgive yourself, and that therefore you don't expect him to forgive you either. Well, how could he forgive me? Well, he can't until you forgive you. And so that's really why the forgiveness thing has to take place in every situation. Remember, forgiveness has nothing to do with the other person or you even talking to them. It has to do with you releasing an emotional understanding, an emotional response to what happened, and letting that go. Okay? And so that emotional response may be, look at, I'm dirt, I'm garbage, look what I did. Well, no, you can't get any further if that's all you're going to think about yourself. You have to let that negative go. And so instead you're like, yes, I did something dumb and that made me garbage at the time, or whatever negative thing, but I'm not that person anymore. I buried that old man. I'm now walking in newness of life, and I don't need to keep holding on to that person that doesn't exist anymore. Okay? All right, Rob, any one more, two more?
Stephen Wood, is John trying to teach us what to do to guard our hearts against hate and bitterness? is this possibly related to wormwood poisoning, a third of waters, and many dying, and Yeshua warning hearts turning cold?
No. Okay, I think he's trying to tell us the result of that. Okay, so it's not so much that he's teaching us about it here. He's telling us, if we're doing this, this is the result of it. Okay, so yes, the wormwood issue and the bitterness and the root of bitterness, all that other stuff is playing into why you would still hate your neighbor or hate your brother and all these other things. So I don't think he's trying to get into the how we ended up in that place. He's trying to tell you that when you're in this place, it's like being a murderer. If you're in this place, now you're feeding into the devil mindset, not the Elohim mindset. He's giving us a perspective of a result of being there as opposed to the causality that got you there in the first place. Okay?
From the blonde Bayou babe, says the term brothers in general, is this referring to those within the camp, those set apart, or even those that are put outside the camp who are not born of Elohim?
All right. I think generally speaking, brothers is talking about those who are in covenant that are in the camp. Now, those who have been put outside are not necessarily not brothers anymore. We're hoping that they're going to come back. All right. So it's talking about those who are covenanted. In other words, those who understand, because that's how it makes us brothers, right? Is that we have if we have the same parents, that makes us brothers or sister, brother and sister, whatever it is, right? Family. And so if we're born from above, which is him opening up our eyes and ears, and we've chosen to be adopted in, so now we have a family relationship, that makes us brothers, okay? And so we're brothers by choice under the same father. And so that's I think, the way I would explain that, okay? Rob, one more?
Okay, this is the last one. From Chelsea Wallen. Says, question, context of being born of Elohim or the devil, maybe be in context of having a quote-unquote bubble pop moment of some degree, because the word doesn't know him, but the world doesn't know him, but we should, since we should choose life in our actions, mindset, with behavior, because it has been revealed to us, but it's all on us to actually actively choose in him or staying in him.
Okay, I think I would agree with most of what was said there. Look, I know that it gets tough. I'm going to deal with this in the sin teaching as well. You know, the perspective on what we call things when we're eyes opened, ears open, like the bubble popped, and versus when we're not, okay? The people in the world are still acting as children of the devil, whether they're aware of it or not, because it's a mindset and a behavior that's out there. That's not a big concern to our Creator. What he's concerned with is when he's opened and revealed the two choices to you, he's concerned about your choice. Not the people that are doing things just by default and that's what they knew and that's where you were before, right? And he called us, you know, those that were living, you know, in the futility of our mind, all thinking we're doing the best we can, not knowing that we're buying into and have bought into by default a false system, okay? And let's not think of like saying that we're children of the devil, like somehow this is like the Christianized and demon devil thing. No, look, the false understanding is what the world does, which is believing in their own understanding or some other person's understanding, some other system's understanding. That's of the devil. We don't have to turn it into this big red horns and the tail and the whole thing. If we saw him, he would look like Yeshua himself. We would not know the difference if he manifested himself. Okay, he wouldn't look scary at all. We'd be all impressed. Appear like an angel of light. And so I would hold nothing against, and I wouldn't use labels like, well, everybody out there in the world, they're just children of the devil. No, that's bad. Don't do that. What he's trying to tell you is based on your understanding now, that when you choose certain things, you're choosing to act like a child of the devil. When you choose other things, you're choosing to act like a child of Elohim. All right? And that's critical to those that have eyes open. Don't worry about everybody else. They'll be fine. Abba has a plan for them. Those that can will make it in. Those that can't won't. Same with all of you that have your eyes open now. Some of you will and some of you won't. Okay? Okay? And he will reveal himself to everybody at some point so they have the choice. I think that everybody gets the life-death choice. Not everybody's had that choice at this point. And so we don't judge anybody. You should be looking at yourself, though, saying, okay, I have a certain accountability and responsibility because I'm aware of something now. And now that I'm aware of it, I have to own that awareness. And so I'm responsible for what I do with that awareness. Before, you were in the futility of your own mind, as he says in Ephesians. You were living in darkness, and you didn't know it. You thought you were in the light, and you were living in darkness. You didn't know any different. And so there's no judgment there. The judgment is based on, what do you do now that you know? What choices do you make now that you know? That's what he's judging. He's watching you, because making decisions is the reason you exist, right? That's the teaching. You might want to go back and listen to that like once a month. Okay, that's one part. Didn't take you that long. But it's the reason you're here. It's the reason he popped your bubble, so you could see what choices you'd make with the new information you have. It's easy to go along with the rest of the world making whatever decisions culturally and, you know, in whatever time frame we live in, et cetera, that made sense to the people at the time. But now he's opened up your understanding to a bigger reality and a bigger picture, and he wants to see, what choices are you going to make? How are you going to respond to situations? Are you going to choose to bend and twist, which is of the devil, or choose to submit and do what he said, which is of him? It's not that complicated. Okay, but let's just be careful that we don't look at others in a wrong way. And that includes people that you think are in the body. Don't look at them in a wrong way either. You got your walk, they've got their walk. That's all you need to know. Okay? Now, they may be doing some things that you feel like I probably should stay a little distant from. That's just being wise and cautious. Just don't judge them and look down on them like they're awful, evil people, because they may be doing certain things that you don't want to be involved in. Okay? Because you may ultimately trip and they may ultimately get in. You don't know. So let's not judge anybody where they are at this very moment. Okay? Right now, maybe you're looking pretty good and maybe they're not. It ain't over yet. Okay? The race is not finished yet. So be careful how you look at other people. You got to finish the race, and then he gets to decide whether you won or not. Okay? That's where the crown is waiting. And he gets to decide if you get one. All right, but you got to endure until the end. Remember that teaching, right? Endure and receive the crown of life. All right, is everybody in? Okay. All right, so we're going to close up here. Thank you, everyone. Excellent job.